As Ian said, we're going to look at John the Baptist this morning. Over each of the weeks of Advent, it's traditional to look at different characters in the Christmas story. And of course, we all know about sort of what happens before Jesus was born and the interaction with John the Baptist then. And then we fast forward to when John the Baptist was out in the desert and people were flocking to him and he was baptizing people and he was a rock star figure. He couldn't have been more popular. And he was a confident, striking person. No wonder people went to see him because he was, you know, confidently pointing at Jesus and saying, "This is the one. He is the one. Follow him. He is the one who has been promised. He is the one who will make everything right. He is the one who will overthrow King Herod and the Roman rule and make everything good again. He is the one." What hope, what conviction. No wonder people flocked to see him out in the desert. However, just 8 chapters later, we come to the story that Kate has just read for us. Rather than this rock star figure out in the desert, John is in prison. Imprisoned by the one that he thought Jesus would overthrow and establish a new order. And John has moved from "this is the one, follow him," to "are you the one? Are you the one?" And there's something so modern and relatable about that question. Are you the one, Jesus? I don't know what your experience of doubt is, but it's a bit, the church treats it a bit like sex, I think. We know it's out there, but it's not something we really talk about. We try and avoid it in case it's too challenging. But I think the good thing, one of the first things I want to say is Jesus is not thrown by John's doubts. He's not thrown by John's question, "Are you the one, Jesus? I thought you were, but are you?" And Jesus is not thrown by that. So I think that's the first thing that I wanted to say. You know, Jesus is not thrown by our doubts, but he does, in his response to John, give 2 really, I think, practical lessons to help John make sure that he's not derailed by his doubts. So Jesus is not thrown by them, but he doesn't want us to be thrown by them. So he gives John 2 really practical lessons or pieces of advice to his question, "Are you the one?" So we're going to have a look at those so that when we doubt, because we will, we do, we're not thrown and we don't lose our way. And the 2 lessons are, number 1, don't take offence. And secondly, assume a humble position. Don't take offence and assume a humble position. Because one of the things that Jesus says in reply to John's question, "Are you the one?" is Jesus replies with, "Blessed is he who does not take offence at me." And Matthew was writing to a very cynical Jewish audience. And they were offended by what Jesus claimed to be. And we also live in an age where we are very quick to take offence. And more than ever, there is great offence at the news of Jesus Christ. And I think there are 2 ways in which it's really easy for us to take offence. And the first is taking offence of the heart. And I think by this I mean, it's really easy when things go wrong and circumstances do not turn out how we hope. It's really easy to say, Are you the one God? How can you say that you are God if you allow this to happen? How can you be God if you allow this to happen to me, this illness, this situation, this loss, or when you allow that circumstances to happen to that person who didn't deserve it, or allow these things to go on in the news that we read each day? It's so easy to look out there or look at what's going on in our circumstances and go, are you the one? In the same way, John, in prison, that didn't look like Jesus was the one. So easy to take offense to the heart. How, God, could you allow this to happen to me? And I'm sure you can all, there are probably some stories that you can, times in your life where you've thought that. A while ago, I came to faith at a really early age, came from a wonderful Christian family. And so, throughout school and university, I was never in the league of John the Baptist, but I was pretty convinced, this is the one. And I thought my faith was pretty unshakable. And that was until we thought God was asking Ian and I to be involved in a church plant. And, we sort of left the church we were at and we really put ourselves out there. We told lots of people what we were doing. And it was hard, but we really thought God was asking us to do this. And yet, for a number of reasons, it didn't work out. And eventually we had to make the decision to close the plant. But the hurt and the shame really led me to a place of doubt. God, if you are God, how can you let me down like that? How can you make me look so stupid, putting myself out there, and yet you don't, things didn't work out. And that, I had to really work through doubt there, because I took offense at the circumstances I was experiencing. I couldn't equate my sense of hurt and shame with a God who I thought was in control. So I took offense at that. And I really had to work through. So I think, and probably there are, a lot of you will be able to relate to circumstances in your life or the life of people close to you where you've just had to really wrestle, like, God, are you the one? How can you allow that to happen? The other way that I think that we take offense at the person of Jesus is through offense of, I'll call it offense of the mind. The way that we think, and I think particularly in this day and age, it seems so outrageous and offensive that here is Jesus saying, I am the one. How can you say you are the one? How can you make this kind of really outrageous truth claim? How arrogant to assume that you are the one. And I think probably, and that's not for just people outside the church. I think it's really easy to be in the church and still go, God, you can have a little bit of me, but not everything. I don't think you are the one. I'll just let you have this bit. I think there's two ways in which it's really easy for us to take offense. Offense of the heart, God, how can you allow this to happen? And offense of the mind, how arrogant to for somebody to claim that he is the one and wants all of me. And I think what lies beneath both those kinds of offense, whether it's offense of the heart, God, how can you allow this to happen, or offense of the mind, how arrogant, God, of you to be to claim that Jesus is the one. I think beneath both kinds of thinking is the fact that we don't like, or we're taking offense that God is not acting how we think he should. God is not being the kind of God that we think he should be. And I think it's so easy for us to look for a God that we can make sense of, a God that we can contain, that fits into our worldview and circumstances. And so we tend to look for a wise guy or a reassuring presence, someone who talks about love and acceptance, somebody who gives us a bit of a boost, helps us feel better about ourselves. Because really, our needs and worldview are staying centre. That's our non-negotiable. And we want God to fit in around that. And I think, actually, we need to be honest. We need to be honest about what kind of God we are looking for. Because on the one hand, I think we're really honest. Actually, a lot of us are really looking for perhaps a counsellor, perhaps a career coach, perhaps a consultant, perhaps a secretary. Make life go a bit smoother. Perhaps we just want to sign him up with a contract, put in some terms and conditions, and then when things improve, when we feel it better, then we can move on. Because that's almost how John was treating God, you know, Jesus. When Jesus didn't fulfill his expectations of who he thought a Messiah should be, are you the one? And I think often we really need to realize that sometimes we are not really treating God like God, because we expect him to act according to how we think a God or a Messiah should act. And when he doesn't, then we take offense. Because the truth is that if God is God, if he is God and not some life coach or consultant or counselor, if he is so awesome, if he is the one who created the world and flung stars into space and is outside time and place, if he is all wise and knowing and loving, then when he comes to us, he will come forcefully. He will come in ways in which we don't always know and understand. He will rearrange our priorities and challenge our worldviews, because he's God. If you think about, you know, the different, you know, if you think about just a basic physics lesson, if you drop a small pebble into a pond, there might be a slight ripple effect, but very quickly the water will return to its kind of tranquil state. Because the weight of what you put in the water is not very big. If you were to drop a huge, large boulder from a great height into water, you know, imagine the displacement and the effect. In the same way that if God is who he says, if he is all great and all powerful and wise and loving and knowing, then when he comes to us, he will change everything, because he is God. Following Christ takes courage, takes conviction and vigor and determination. We cannot be ambivalent about this. Sometimes I feel that when Jesus responds to John, he's a bit uncaring, if I'm honest. I think if it was me and John was to come and say, "Yeah, are you the one? Look, life sucks in the moment. Things haven't worked out how I thought." I think I'd go, "Oh, John, I'm really sorry. You know, let's rescope things a bit. Let's sort of like, you know, let's, you know, rather than me being the one, perhaps we can just sort of, you know, water that down a bit. Is that going to work for you?" But Jesus does not take that approach. He does not take that approach. And the opposite, he says, "Tell John, I am who I say I am, and I am at work whether you can see it or not. And there is a blessing for those who believe without taking offense. I am who I say I am. I am at work whether you can see it or not. And blessed are those who don't take offense at what I'm saying." So God comes and he challenges us. He comes and he changes us. And he promises blessing upon blessing upon blessing to those of us who don't take offense. So that's the first point. I think that's one thing that, you know, in the midst of doubt, I think that's God's call to us, is don't take offense. I am God. You might not be able to see how I'm working, but I am God. So that's the first way in which we can make sure that we are not derailed when doubt comes. The second way is that this passage shows us is that to make sure that we're not derailed by doubt, assume a position of humility. So when Jesus replies to John, he never really answers John's question, are you the one? He never actually directly answers that. Instead, he says this, the blind receive their sight, the lame walk, the dead are raised, the lepers are healed, and the good news is preached to the poor. And at first we think, Jesus, you're not actually answering the question. Are you the one? But actually, if we dig below the surface, Jesus' reply teaches us some amazing truth. Because while John cannot see God at work in his own circumstances, he's in prison. Actually, Jesus' response tells us about the kind of people who are open to God, the kind of people who do see God at work, the kind of people who God does reveal himself to. Because who are the ones that who see God? And over and over and over again throughout the Bible, he doesn't come to the well-connected, the powerful, the rich. He comes to the poor, the lost, the last, and the least. It is the way of God to come to him from a place of need and humility. And we know that at Christmas, don't we? Because Jesus didn't come as a mighty conquering king. God came to us through Jesus as a baby. Mercy, repentance, humility is where and how God works. Those who recognize this will know God's blessing. And we need to walk in that way also of humility. Repentance, confession, vulnerability, if we are to see him at work. Because the blind, the poor, the lame, they know they need God. So assume the position of humility. Develop habits of repentance, of mercy, of coming to God in awe and wonder. These are the ways of God, and they are the ways to see God at work. So to come in and land, doubts will come. There will come times when we say, are you the one? Do you want all of me? Are you the one? We shouldn't be surprised. We don't take offense because God is not doing what we think he should. And we adopt a position of humility. Because it's then that we can see God and allow him to come to us and reveal himself to us. So some really practical things for us today. And we're going to come to a time of response. And I think we'll stay sitting. We're going to sing Faithful One, So Unchanging. And the chorus is, I cry out to you again and again and again. And so this is an invitation to you to cry out again to him this morning. And there may be parts of your life where you are asking God, are you the one? Do you really want all of me? Are you really in control? And so this is a time for us to allow God to be God, to be that faithful one, so unchanging, and for us to come to him in a position of worship and need and confession. So we'll stay seated and we'll sing Faithful One.
Words to that. Thank you.